Welcome to For the Long Run, the podcast exploring the why behind what keeps runners running long, strong, and motivated. I'm your host, Jonathan Levitt. Through personal and professional connections in the running world, I have the privilege of getting to know some amazing athletes. I've always been fascinated by the psychological aspect of running, and this podcast is aimed at exploring this and much more. I hope you enjoy. This episode is brought to you by UCAN. If you know me, you know I'm all about personalization and not having a one-size-fits-all solution. That applies to training, nutrition in general, and nutrition for training, and UCAN is another tool in the toolbox I've loved over the years. Along with professional athletes like Alexi Pappas and Meb, I've used UCAN for marathons in the past and have recently begun incorporating their superstarch into my day-to-day routine and before my long runs for steady energy. Superstarch provides long-lasting energy and helps keep your blood sugar stable with tasty summer flavors like Cran Raz, Tropical Orange, and more. I also love their bars, particularly the chocolate peanut butter flavor, as a late morning or mid-afternoon snack. Take 15% off your order at UCAN.co with the code FTLR. Welcome back. I have Alexi Pappas joining me today. Alexi, thanks so much for taking some time to chat.
Hello. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. First question, who is Alexi?
Oh man, I wasn't prepared for this. Okay, who is Alexi? Today, Alexi is wearing sweats, which I think a lot of us have been in that mode during stay at home. Today I am a runner, a filmmaker, a writer, and an actress. I think that's what I do. I am, you know, we shouldn't just label ourselves as that. So I'm also like a curious person who likes to push myself to the edge, but is learning how to also, you know, be kind to myself and be okay using the breaks.
I love that. So you're a curious person who likes to push herself to the edge. This whole podcast is aimed at exploring exactly that. Like, why? Why do you do it? What is it about? What is it about riding that line that you love so much?
You know, I don't even know if I love riding the line as much as I don't know any other way to live in a way that I could live with. It's painful, I think, being the type of person, as I've always been since my earliest memories, who just would like to try my best. And I think trying my best, or, you know, anyone can, I think, relate to wanting to try your best. But for me, it does. That means having integrity with everything I do and the things that I do. If you, you know, with the writing and with the running, if you're doing your best in those worlds, you are pushing on your edge. So I feel, you know, lucky and cursed by that motivation.
Totally. It's sort of a double-edged sword, but you definitely learn a lot along the way. One of the things that I love about your online personality and sort of the vibe that you bring to the world is use the phrase bravey. It's all about being a bravey. For those who don't know, can you explain what is a bravey?
Yeah. So bravey came about, I like to write poetry, and that was my way into writing. And I used to, I guess I still do. I write little poems on social media. And one day I wrote a poem that was, "Run like a bravey, sleep like a baby, dream like a crazy, replace can't with maybe." And bravey was a word that came from the word brave, and it rhymed, but it also kind of took on its own life at that point. And I think what it means is, you know, so many of the words that we, at least like, I think female athletes and probably athletes in general or driven people strive for are like, a very outward facing words like strong and fierce. And those are, you know, performances to the world. And I think what bravey is more inward facing. And I think that's why it stuck, because it's a real word, but it's also more up to you what it means. And it's more about how you are, you know, feeling inside. And that I think people identified with and we ran with, so much so that it's the title of my upcoming memoir. So it, I think it's resonated with people for that reason.
And you get a lot of people tagging you in, hey, I did a workout and I was a Bravey. Or like, I mean, I've even texted you about workouts I've done or long runs I've done where this came up in my head. And some of the mantras that you've shared are what's allowed runners to sort of attain more and achieve more than what they might have found possible. So how much of it is just sharing what's working for you, and how much of it is like you recognizing that people are thriving based on, I mean, you're not coaching them, but you're giving them coaching, right?
I think it's tools, and mostly just that, you know, as an Olympic athlete, some of the things that I do wouldn't be smart for everybody to do. And so when we have people we're following, whether we're looking up to them or imitating them or both, I think we want to, you know, imitate essentially. And if I were to put out simply what I'm literally doing, I think that wouldn't be a very wise or responsible thing to do, because we shouldn't all be doing the same things, but we can all have a similar mentality, or we could wear the same things. Like, there's other things that I feel more comfortable with people imitating. And I think that using words to give people a different way of seeing their training or their goals is a gift that I can give to people, and that I am uniquely equipped to do, because I have a very, you know, I have a fascination with words, and I think a solid grip on them. And it's what does help me too, is to just see things a little differently. In a way that, you know, running is a mental sport. And so you have to play some mind games with yourself. And if it's playful or empowering, that's all the better, you know?
Definitely. One of the things you mentioned is your memoir, Bravey, is coming out soon. What got you motivated to put out a book?
Yeah, I'm so excited. So the book came about shortly after the Olympics, the last Olympics. And I think people found this New York Times article that came out about me and asked if I would be interested in writing a book. So when is the time to write a book? I was just, you know, 26 at the time, but I started talking and joined like a literary management team. And we talked about how a memoir is not like the end of your life. It's just like, how did you get to this point? And that is really what Bravey Book is it's how did I get to this point? And I feel like this point is like the end of the beginning of my life. And so it felt like actually a really appropriate time to put a little bookmark in there and figure out how did I become like a Bravey myself. And it was good timing too, because after an Olympics is like tremendous time of reflection and transition. And it was the right time to write this particular book, which is a memoir and essays. And it is about growing up, losing my mom to suicide when I was 4, and finding those mentors myself that helped me become who I am, because it was definitely not a solo pursuit for me, you know?
Who were some of those mentors?
The book, you know, for me, it started out as athletes that were not runners, because at the time, you know, when I was little, there wasn't social media. And so athletes that I looked up to were the USA women's soccer team was really present even without social media. So I looked up to Mia Hamm and that generation of soccer players. I looked up to pop stars. And then as I started to grow up, my mentors were both intimate and close to me, meaning my friends' moms and women that I had access to. And then more outward reaching, you know, it started to be movie stars and it eventually became runners. And so the specific people I talk about are, you know, a couple close friends, you know, moms, and then, you know, people like Dina Castor has become my mentor. So it's a wide cast net. And I think what I've done in my life is put the qualities that I admire in all these women into like a patchwork quilt of who I wanted to be. And I think that's all we all probably ever do is like, I want this quality from this person. And you just sort of start imitating and then adopting, and then it becomes you.
And your focus on the next generation, is that your, you know, unintentional or intentional way of paying it forward for those who might be craving that mentor or role model that they might not have in their life?
Yeah, I think it became inevitable that I cared the most about the people who reminded me of a younger me who really needed and really craved and sought after that type of mentor. And then it became, I mean, compulsion sounds like a bad word, but it's like I just really care about that.
Care, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also recognize that like I can speak to that audience because I'm so closely in touch with what it felt like to be them. And I think when you're, maybe that's another reason to have written the book now, because I'm not so far off from, and I still have people I admire and look up to, and I always will, but I'm closer to that time than I will be in the future, you know?
Yeah. And one of the things that we talked about earlier this year was how you feel on a physical level, sort of better than you felt in the past. What were the lessons that you had to learn over and over again before you were sort of able to get to a place where you feel this good and where you feel confident in your abilities and your skills and everything like that?
It's interesting because when I started running, I think access to information was a lot more difficult. I mean, now maybe there's too much information out there, but when I was, you know, in college, the lessons that I was learning about, you know, whether it was mental training or more nutritional stuff, it came from word of mouth from the captains or our coaches, whoever was immediately in your net. And now I think there's a lot more information out there and I've learned a lot more stuff that seems really basic. Like this spring, I was stuck in Greece due to COVID and I was meant to go over there for a couple of weeks and ended up out there for almost 5 months. And there was a coach there that was taking care of me and I learned things from him even as like almost 30 years old. That I didn't realize, like basic, like just needing more carbs, you know, like I thought I was eating enough carbs, but apparently the marathon is a different sport and you need an enormous amount of carbs and it's not too much. And the ratios that I was eating them in were pretty off. And working with you and Inside Tracker has been helpful because, you know, I ran a 9-minute PR in the Houston Marathon, but we looked at my blood afterwards and I guess like my iron was just like, and I take iron, but I suppose when I was taking it, maybe the type I was taking, it just wasn't, my levels were like not great. And they're like, you could have run so much faster. And I was like, okay, I need to like get on it. And I guess at this level, at any level, when you're training, man, it's like, you need to tick off those boxes. So I've always known. I just think now I'm realizing to pay attention more. Before, it was like just me looking at my blood work, and now I'm sharing it. The carb stuff I used to do pretty intuitively, but now I'm more thoughtful about it. So I don't know if that answers your question. It's just, I guess it's just to say that, like, even as an Olympian, I don't think I was doing everything right. I just did it right enough to be there. And maybe I could be, we can always be learning.
Yeah. The, it's interesting. It's like, you know, we have so many resources around us, and it's the limiting factor is you don't know what you don't know. I mean, I saw your friend, Allie Kiefer, post about, she worked with a nutritionist who said, you're eating too many carbs. And that was wrong for Allie, and probably for most. And it's just like all of these things that we hear are often opinion based, and and it's yeah, you just got to eat. That's the number one thing that we see over and over again. It's like if you eat more often, that's the thing to do. So has that been easy for you? Has that been hard for you? And definitely appreciate your openness in sharing that.
Yeah. Wait, just getting back to what you just said. So she was told that she was eating too much, but she was like, well, I feel good, so this must be right for me. Was that her situation? And I know Allie well. I just wasn't sure what you...
I just know from what I saw on her Instagram post, but I guess she was working with a nutritionist, and she'll be on the podcast again in a couple of weeks. So I'm going to dive deeper into it with her maybe. But she was working with a nutritionist who said to cut back on the carbs.
Okay. And she didn't feel like that because she was doing fine. So she didn't feel that was the best.
I think she did do it, and then she didn't feel good.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think for me, like, so let's see. I think I did a really good job of fueling in Oregon when I was training for the Olympics. And part of it was like, that place is such a like bursting with food and life and access to everything. And so it was, and also like I had these sponsorships that were food sponsors when I was there, like a bread sponsor, a fish sponsor, a veggie sponsor. And so by virtue of just like visiting these sponsors, I knew I was getting a lot of those basics in, because it was just like in my routine to like pick up veggies, pick up bread, and it was very seasonal eating because Oregon has access to that type of food. And I think where I got a little challenged was when I moved to Mammoth, which I loved Mammoth, but I think the fueling was a little different because there was one grocery store there at the time. And so it was no longer this like, there wasn't as much of a connection to like the seasonality of things. Like it was a Vons. So it's very, there's not a ton of seasonality in a grocery store like that. Like it's more, you can always expect to have these basic things. So it's up to you to make sure you get everything. And it's not that I didn't try. It just was like, I needed to suddenly put forth a different kind of effort. And I truly wasn't probably eating seasonally. And I think that in combination with being at high altitude the whole time and a little different training environment, I started to have like the first injuries of my life, because I never had an injury before I turned 27. So it's I'm pretty durable. But I do think that it wasn't helpful for me to just be at, and it wasn't just like, if you shop at one grocery store, you're going to have issues. But for me, right. For whatever reason, it did seem to shift something along with other factors. And then I've since moved back to like a place where there's that sort of nutritional access in LA, and I feel better. I think also the food stuff is really mental. So for me, I go now to like a farmer's market once a week, and we get all of our produce for the week. I have a delivery with ButcherBox for the meat, and that's pretty like high quality. So like, I think there's a mental component where I'm like, I'm obviously going to be eating seasonally and eating a wide variety, because when you go to a farmer's market, you get what's available. And I like being there. I like the thought of like, okay, now I have 1 week to like cook all this food and eat it all.
Yeah.
So I think for me, I'm also like a really mental athlete and I believe more in this kind of a philosophy. In terms of like the carbs, when I went to Greece, the coach there was really involved in a way that I wasn't used to and really asking like, what are you eating every day? And so he learned through what I was eating that it just wasn't enough carbs. And I was so, you know, it was like the middle of COVID. I did not expect to be stuck there. I didn't expect to basically switch coaches by virtue of being stuck there. And so I just bought in where I was like, whatever, I'm going to do whatever this guy says because he's smart and he's invested and I'm, you know, here. And so I just did what he said. And the thing that I noticed right away was that some people I think are afraid of like gaining weight if they eat too many carbs. But I think I actually leaned out a bit because I was probably giving myself like enough fuel so that my body didn't have to hold on to it. And I think that's a shift that some people might surprisingly find when they eat more or eat more carbs, is that their body might actually let some of it cycle through more naturally and not hold on to it. So I felt better. I felt like I could get through long runs like with more energy. And you know what? I don't mean to keep talking, but you know what he told me that I thought was really fun and maybe anyone could use this to help them, is he was like, if you don't feel like kind of shitty and heavy at the beginning of a long run, like the first, he was like 30 to 45 minutes, you should feel heavy and kind of sluggish, then you haven't had enough carbs to get you through the whole thing. And I thought that was so fun. Cause then I was like, okay, I feel crappy on the warm up, or like, I don't feel great. I feel a little heavy. And he's like, that means you've retained enough water. Because another thing he noticed was that I was so salty when I got there and sweating so much. So he upped my electrolytes. And so for my carbs, I was, yes, like using more of the UCAN than I had prior. So I used it before, but I was using it a lot more before than I used to, more before and after. So anyway, the point is that I just followed him and I think I got lucky that it was like pretty good guidance and he was really invested. But more doesn't mean that you're going to gain weight. I think I definitely leaned out a little bit and I certainly felt better with that philosophy.
It's fascinating. You answered like three questions.
I know, sorry. It was a lot.
No. That I was going to ask that you just like fed into. I was super curious about how the food situation in Greece compared to California. It's fascinating to hear the differences and the differences in the approach. I think that for some, the decision to eat more is very formulaic and straightforward. And for others, I think it's a huge mountain to climb. And I think that just having the discussion is probably helpful for many. I know I've had many conversations with friends and athletes who are experiencing struggles with eating enough or eating more or whatnot. So I think just being open like you have been is helping, you know, a lot of people.
Yeah, I tried to post where I was like, I'm eating like this much bread every day, which and I'll be honest, like it was an adjustment for me. Like I felt like this has to be too much. It's like a huge loaf of bread and like a box of whole wheat pasta. I was like, isn't this like excessive? And I was like in this unique window of time. So maybe people, if they can approach it as like maybe one positive of being in this pandemic lockdown situation is that they can try to like approach their experimentation with a new approach with the open-mindedness that this is a kind of a wrinkle in time. Like there's no race coming up. This is out of the routine. And so you might as well give something a shot that could surprise you with some positive effects.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, you might, it's that, like, if there was ever a time to try a different approach to your life or to your nutrition, it's probably now, right?
For sure. So one of the things you mentioned there is, you know, the unknown, and there are no races, and there are, you know, the Olympics are 364 days from today, hopefully. So how are you handling that? And how are you going about training with this uncertainty that's sort of looming over us?
Yeah, it's a great question, because it certainly was a shock to me when it all started to unfold. Like I literally went over to Greece to run an Olympic qualifying race, and then the races got pushed, and then eventually the Olympics got pushed. And the way I'm approaching it is, I think I'm paying more attention to less attention to pace specific and more attention to volume. So that's like a very basic difference. It's like I'll run for a certain amount of miles every day, but I'm not paying as much attention to how fast they are. And that's allowed me to do a little bit more trail running than like you might do if you were a month or two away from a marathon, which is run on the roads, as we know. So I think that's giving me more joy. I'm working on weaknesses that I have intrinsically, which, to be honest, is just like trying to focus more on, I've posted a little bit about this on my Instagram, but drills and becoming more of like a dense athlete. And that goes hand in hand with running on more trails, running with different people. So I do think that as long as I'm healthy, I don't need to like hit any specific benchmark at this moment. And you know, I've been able to fine tune certain things. Like I think the blood work is another thing that I, you know, just really trying to figure out, how am I going to absorb the iron? Cause I think I don't have like the ability to absorb vitamin B normally. And so that was affecting my iron. So it's just like, it's getting into details that like, I may not give myself time for in a buildup that is like, it feels like the race is around the corner. So yeah. And also just that there are other areas of my life that are really blooming right now. Like we just finished and turned in the final draft of the book. I'm working on a movie and a television show. So I think just having running fit into like a blooming life is a really healthy thing for anyone to strive for. And certainly for me, it feels like running is fitting more in with my lifestyle if I embrace that it's not the only thing that I'm doing.
Definitely. The idea of balance is something that comes up quite often. And I had a conversation with Lindsay Krause, and she described balance in the best way that I've ever heard it described. It's like a triangle. And sometimes the triangle is equilateral. So life, relationships, running, it's all equal. Sometimes it's acute. Sometimes it's obtuse. You know, sometimes one piece of that triangle is bigger than the rest, but it can't always be that way, or it can't continue to be that way. Otherwise, the triangle will collapse. So how does your triangle look today? And have you struggled with balance, or have you struggled with this fitting running into a flourishing life that contains, you wear a ton of hats. How does that work?
Yeah, I like the triangle image, and I really, really admire Lindsay. So that's really cool to learn. For me, it's always like, what is my number one? It's just knowing what my priority is at any given moment. And it answers all questions, because it means that my time goes first to the first priority. And, you know, for example, before the Olympics, running is your first priority. Any creative work is going to fit into like the crevices of that bigger pursuit. In the last few weeks, you know, I've really embraced that running is a priority, but it's allowed to take time-wise, like I'm allowed to fit it around my creative priority, which actually right now is more timely because submitting your final manuscript for your book or, you know, writing the TV show that has real deadlines, that's almost like those are the races. And running, I've scheduled in around those priorities. And because I'm not on a team that meets every day, I mean, I meet someone to run every day, but we're both in like the, we're entrepreneurs and we'll schedule it around what we need to do. It helps because I'm not like the running can be a little bit of a moving piece. So for me, it's always like, what's my number one priority right now? And that might shift tomorrow. It might shift like every month or so. But like today in July, I don't need to like squeeze so tight on the running that the other priorities that have very real deadlines right now are going to slip. And it doesn't mean I'm not running. It just means that the time when I run and exactly like what I do for a run might be more flexible than it would be if we were around the corner from the big race. And I think that's probably healthy for the running as well, because if you just, if it feels like it's, I'm pressing on the gas the whole year, I think it's a little taxing, and we all have those ebbs and flows. And I think right now is like the ebb. We can relax a little with like feeling like running is the king.
Yeah. And I think that's important for anything to recognize the ebbs and flows. You sort of have to, I like to look at it as a slingshot. Like sometimes you do have to pull back so that you can spring forward in either running or in other areas of life.
Yeah. Or just like, and you know, or if you're running with somebody that you don't normally run with and you have, let's say you plan 10 miles and they have like 13, if you're in this like more relaxed state, you might actually run 13 because you're like, I'll be okay going right. A couple of, like, I feel like I've gotten a unique dose of fitness by being a little flexible right now. Because if somebody else is like, you know, I really want to do like a hilly 10 miles and I could have just as easily done a flat 9 miles, I'm going to get so much out of that hilly 10 miles. And I don't know where that's going to like culminate in, but I know like as long as I'm healthy enough to do it, and I have company, I'm actually going to grow more from that. So I think letting other people's life affect ours, if we have that benefit of someone like that, is kind of a cool thing. And also, you know, really embracing a full voluptuous life. Like sometimes I'll go straight from a run to like a writing room session. And that's not like a normal, you know, transition. And I'm, you know, we talked about those UCAN bars, is like I'm eating those bars in the car or bringing a milkshake to the writing room.
They're delicious.
So good. Yeah. We'll talk about that. But it's just like embracing that, like, this is actually not a reason why I'm not going to succeed. This is a reason why my life is like overflowing with greatness.
That's awesome. And for sponsoring this episode, I've run 2 marathons fueled on UCAN and have experimented with it over the years and have found quite a positive impact on some specific health related metrics that I'll be following again over the coming months. Sports nutrition products aren't something you would consume throughout the day, but many use UCAN as part of their daily routine for healthy energy. I can't get enough of the chocolate peanut butter bars. Superstarch is the underlying carbohydrate in UCAN, and it provides long-lasting energy by keeping your blood sugar stable, and it is super easy on the stomach. Available in powders and bars, you can save 15% on your order at UCAN.co with the code FTLR. And now back to Alexi. Do you run to gain something or to lose something?
I run to gain something. I think I gain like a calmness the rest of the day. Because what I'm trying to do is like hard. Like I think I have several pursuits that like any one of them would be okay.
Like a full time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I recognize that if I run in the morning, even if there's no goal in sight, I am a happier and more like okay person the rest of the day. Like, I recognize that I'll always want to have that in my life. So right now it's helping me gain calmness, or we could say it helps you lose anxiety. If that, like, oh yeah.
Now more than ever. Yeah.
What about you?
So somebody, submit this question, and I was like, wow, I hope I don't get asked this question.
Oh, well, neither.
I think it's both. I think it's gaining confidence and gaining the ability to, right? So like, I love running because of the crossover it has in life, and everything that you learn on a run or in a week or training cycle or season can be applied into life, right? If everything is easy, you're not trying hard enough. The same thing is true in life. If everything in life is easy, you should take on more risk and challenge yourself in different ways. Same thing at work. If your job is easy, you need to set higher goals. So for me, I run to see what's possible. And I think that is on the gaining confidence and gaining skill and ability side of it, both for running and for life. Like, I was having a conversation with my coach about goal setting and challenging others to set higher goals. And it's boring if your goals are attainable. And you have a quote that's pinned to your Instagram or was pinned to your Instagram at one point. And correct me if I butcher this, but I think it was, thank goodness I haven't accomplished all of my goals yet, because what would I do tomorrow? And that's sort of like how I approach running. Like, if you achieve what you set out to achieve, it's not over. You can just achieve more. And so for me, that's the process of running that I enjoy. It's the like consistent leveling up of how can you set the bar higher, go get it, and then what used to be hard is now your normal, right? Like, when you started running the mileage that you're running now was probably completely unattainable for a peak week. But now your average week is average and attainable, and you just keep leveling up until you keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. The growth is very satisfying. I think that's great. And you remind me of myself when I was like chasing my first Olympics, in a way where you're just like so hungry to like push. And I think I have a different perspective on it now, where like I do want to push and I do want to go there, but I also just want to like cruise and enjoy and let it come to me. I think it's a little different for me now, because I know like what I know I can get there. I think before it was such a mystery of like, where are my like peaks, and I know I can always get better, but now I'm more just like, how can I give myself the space every day to just like explore in that unknown and let it come to me and trust. I think I just trust more now that I'm going to try hard every day if I run, and I don't have to try too hard to try hard. Does that, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
It used to be like, am I trying my best? And now I'm more like, no, I know I have like integrity and I try my best. I just need like to give myself the time every day to do that.
Well, I think that's the difference between like being in love with the process and being in love with, like, I don't want to say improving. I used to chase times, and for me, success was measured. Did I break 18 in the 5K? Did I break 17:45 in the 5K? Did I break, you know, 3 in the marathon? And for me now, it's like, did I have fun on that run? Did I enjoy it? Did I have a smile on my face? And, you know, did I get beat down by that 16 mile long run that I started at noon, but I still loved it? And I think that's the, like you can't be there on day one of running. And I think that's the, I mean, that's the evolution that I've had. And I think that that's the evolution that it takes to continue to excel. So I'm curious, is that sort of, is your experience similar where it's more process oriented versus I must make the Olympics versus I want to show up for myself every day and just see what happens?
Yeah, I think it's more that the Olympics might happen for me if I, but it's only going to happen for me at this point in my life if I don't squeeze too hard on it. So, because I think my life has progressed enough in its entirety that, that one, it's not the only goal that I have, but it is like, it's always, you know, it's a privilege and it's a gift. And I know that I'm only going to get there if I'm thriving as a person. And so right now my thriving as a person means doing all the things that I've grown in addition to running. And what it means for everyday running is that I want to give myself, I just want to like, if I like sweat and work a little bit hard every day, I know that it will add up. That's like, I just think it's like a maturity thing of knowing that like,
yeah,
it doesn't have to be super special to add up. And it also doesn't have to be super easy to like, I've had some days out here that are like these hilly, trail runs, and they're kind of unglamorous. They're gorgeous, but like, you don't really understand how that's going to translate. But then I think back to days in Oregon where like we used to do our long runs in the hills and the trails, and it would take us like forever to just run 10 miles. And I know I ran well then. So I think now I'm resting more peacefully knowing what has worked for me. And every buildup is different, but I know like roughly just trying a little bit hard every day, and then also ending practice is super important. I don't mean to ramble, but like, I appreciate that I have the other stuff in my day. And I think probably a lot of your listeners have other things in their life as well, where you can't train more than an hour or two a day. And that's actually like all you need to be doing. It doesn't need to be your whole day to be a successful training day.
Is gratitude something that you proactively or you actively practice?
I think I call it relishing rather than gratitude. It's probably the same thing, but I think I'm more likely to be hard on myself for all the things I would like to do and how there's just simply not enough hours in the day sometimes. And what I've tried to do is every evening sit down and usually talking with my husband, and we're like, what went well today? And let's relish. And actively inserting that into our day has been like a practice we started, and we really do it as a practice because it's not natural to be proud of yourself, or maybe for some people it is, but for me, it's easier to be hard on myself. So I guess it's a form of gratitude, but it's more like a form of like actively being proud or being kind or building your confidence. And I suppose gratitude would be its close cousin.
Yeah, I love that. My coach often calls out, you know, for us to explicitly celebrate things like that. Celebrate normalcy or celebrate, you know, things that are exciting or different or new or whatnot. And I think that that sort of self-love is super important.
Yeah, and just making it all feel like an adventure. Like when things get really hard, you're like, well, this is all part of like an overall life picture that I've chosen, hopefully, and that I embrace as like a choice rather than a sacrifice. And sometimes that means your meal is like a very thought out, normal family dinner. And sometimes it's like totally on the go or scrapped together. And you're like, but this is a part of my overflowing, wonderful, full life.
So fast forward 10 years, What are you most proud of that you've accomplished in this overflowingly proud and amazing life?
I'm really proud of being an Olympian, and I think I'm prouder than I used to be, because when I was doing it, you know, the first time around, I was like, I don't know. I never thought about injuries, so I never got injured. I do admire like the person who qualified for Rio, because I'm like, that is like, I think it was only like my second or third 10K in my life that qualified. And I don't think I had a doubt in my mind that I could do it. And I think that kind of youthful bravery and confidence is something that like you just hope won't wear off, because it's such a youthful mm-hmm. thing to feel, is like that invincibility. So I think that's something that I will become more and more proud of every year. Yeah.
What's an example of a time where you may have failed at achieving something or getting something that, looking back, wasn't really a failure?
I think the challenges that I faced after the Olympics were, I did have those injuries, and I did try living at altitude in a way that I think wasn't ultimately like the best for me. And it felt, I remember like feeling like it was always like, we can always feel like our injuries are our fault, because like somewhere along the way, you'll be able to trace something that you could have shifted. However, I think that that time in general was, it did like project me forward in a lot of ways, which like, you know, we could get into details, but it was all cumulative. Like your life is always like adding up to the next thing. So I think it was very hard during that time, and it felt like it was my fault. And I think I've learned that it's not your fault unless you learn a lesson and you don't make a change. I think that's the only thing, is that like there are no mistakes, I think, are only if you like make them multiple times. I think if you learn, if you make it once, then you're just learning a lesson. So I think I learned some lessons there, and I'm trying to see those as that.
What do you wish people knew about you?
I wish people knew everything that's going to be in the book, man. It's not, I mean, it's going to surprise people, because it's not just about running, and it is very, I don't think anybody, like not even my closest friends, like it will even surprise them. So it's going to be a tough read, I think, in a great way. Like it's just a beautiful, vibrant, I'm so proud of it. So maybe that's the thing I'm most proud of. And I really hope that people read it, because I think they see what's at the tail end of all the thoughts. Like they see like the poem at the end, the very end of the whole lesson and the process. But the book represents like the very root of like, where did that person come from? And where I came from was like some really challenging stuff that I felt was most appropriate to fit into. It was most appropriate in book form, not like parsed out throughout, you know, in social media posts. So that's why it's in a book.
And it's available to pre-order now, right?
It's available to pre-order now, and it comes out in very early January. And if you pre-order it, you get a custom champion gift, and it's going to be really cool. so you want that. And yeah, I think also if you have not tried the new Yukan bars, they're new and they're really good, and I can't stop eating them.
Well, anything chocolate peanut butter is good in my book. What was the creative process like for writing the book?
Well, I had a great editing team. My editors did the book Untamed, which is like a bestseller right now. And they just We decided to do it in essay form. So you should be able to read like one of the essays, one of the chapters on its own. But the whole thing has an emotional arc. So it's less of a narrative arc than an emotional arc. And they let me write and submit chapters. And then we kind of towards the end of the process figured out what the book was really about. And it's really about, I guess, chasing your dreams and being a bravey, but a lot of that has to do with mental health and my own journey with it and just grappling with some of my mom's stuff. So yeah, it was a hard journey to write, but it helped that I was nursing some injuries during it. So I had some downtime to write as well. Made the most of it.
That's awesome. The mental health discussion is one that is near and dear to my heart, and I very much appreciate the your willingness to be open with that as well. So if you don't follow Alexi on social media, I highly recommend that as well. But what is your relationship with mental health? And I know you've got just a couple of minutes left here, so I could talk to you all day about this, and maybe we'll have to catch up again in the future. But what is your relationship with mental health?
Well, I think that I have as involved a relationship as anyone could, because I lost my mom to suicide when I was 4, almost 5. And, you know, so the first like 5 years of my life were really surrounded by my mom's last few years. And a lot of that, you know, was just challenging because she was just at the edge of herself, and during a time when it was not super like okay to have mental illness, you know, in the 90s, it was just a totally different time. I think now it's almost celebrated to be open about that kind of struggle. And then it was like the total opposite. So there was just, our house was just like a little private den of depression. And she was bipolar and manic, and there was like a lot then. And I think for me, I just have always been pushing against being like her. And I thought I was like really like going to be able to do that by chasing like dreams such as the Olympics that make me feel like I mattered. And I think what I learned is like, you know, I have a high pain tolerance probably through her. But what I also learned is that like, I couldn't try to solve that internal problem with an external solution. And I would soon have to face the real like grief of that. And so I experienced my own post-Olympic depression, and that, you know, really, I've never really talked about that. And that's also in the book. And I think it came full circle for me when I was like, really understood what it is to have that. And I think I was susceptible because it's like runs really strongly in her family. But when I experienced it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, I understood why the kind of treatment she had wouldn't have helped her, because I had some great help and then some first really challenging help. And so I think the book, like if anyone has any doubts or has any feelings themselves of mental health stuff, like it's going to help you, because I really felt the lowest feelings anyone can ever feel and have seen some really tough stuff. And I think have used my gift of words to translate it into a really relatable book.
Well, that's awesome. Again, really appreciate how open you are on that. And again, the words that you share on social are helping many people. So on that note, where can people find you if they want to follow along with you or the words and messages that you're putting out into the world?
Yeah. So my Instagram and my Twitter are just my name, Alexi Pappas. And the book, you can easily find it if you go on alexipappas.com. There's a link to like our book landing page, and then you can order it off your favorite website. You know, if you prefer Barnes & Noble or Amazon or Powell's, or there's like links to all those order places, and all of them will qualify you for the pre-order gift, which I think is going to be so fun. And the introduction or the foreword is written by Maya Rudolph, who's one of my, you know, people I really admire. And she wrote just an incredible foreword. So if you don't know who I am, maybe you know Bridesmaids and all the things she's done. She's amazing. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, so are you. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat today. And we'll see you out there.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to be in such great company on this podcast.
Of course. And likewise.
Okay. Talk soon.
That's it for today's episode. Like many long runs, it's sad when it has to end. I hope you join in next week on For the Long Run. And in the meantime, happy trails. If you've enjoyed this episode, it would mean a lot to me if you shared it so that others can find it and enjoy it too.